This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. As you might already know, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there right now just waiting to solve some of the world's biggest problems. If you're a farmer, that gives you about 2 billion reasons to encourage people to use biofuels. Learn more at poet.com/ag. How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more. The grain markets recovered from early price pressure to end the day mostly on the plus side of unchanged, and the cattle complex also made a push to the upside with mixed trade in lean hogs. But most importantly, critical support levels held.
Live from a Tuesday of Turning Wheels via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we welcome Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions. In the final segment, Jason Tadgy from Farm Mobile. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yeah, thank you so much. Just let's call it 2 to 2.5 cents higher in corn today. Some double-digit gains in soybeans, just barely. Double-digit gains. Soybean meal and bean oil both work to the upside. Soft red wheat slightly lower, slightly higher in the hard red winter wheat. Solid gains. I'm going to call them solid because of where we came from at the lows of the day. So solid gains in live cattle and in feeder cattle and mixed trade in lean hog futures. Okay. We're off and I shouldn't say we're off and running. I'm off and running. After a day off yesterday, trying to get all caught up with everything that's going on in the markets.
We missed you so dang much, Chip. I mean, come on, dude. I'm sure.
I'm sure.
I know. Yeah. It was awful. Well, the guest hosts were good, but it just, you know, it wasn't the same. Something was missing. And then on top of that, like, okay, so I'm wearing a zip-up shirt, okay? And I've been wearing it yesterday. All day I wore it yesterday. I'm still wearing it today.
Hey, 1980 and, like, called. David.
My neck beard is getting long. I need to shave. And every once in a while, I turn my head and my neck whiskers get stuck in the zipper. It's absolutely miserable. And then you weren't here on top of it all.
Yeah.
I don't know, Chip. Yeah. I don't know.
This is a lot of information to take in that's creating a lot of different images right now.
I don't know
if I like any of it.
Well, without you, it was absolutely miserable. I am unbearable to be around right now, actually.
What?
I'm only still just recovering from your absence.
That's incredible. That is incredible. Beautiful day out there. Let's change subject. Beautiful
day. I love
day.
Every second of that. Yeah.
We are moving harvest right along, and it's got to be having some kind of an impact in these markets. We'll talk to Brian about that coming up here in just a little bit. Brian Hoops.
You bet.
All right. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, export inspections of wheat lined up with trade expectations and totaled just over 514,000 metric tons in the weekend of October 8. Demand for U.S. wheat is an important factor to watch, but traders agree weather conditions in the Black Sea region and Argentina are more important at this time, at all times, right, Chip? And while weather forecasts call for increased rains in Russia and Ukraine, Black Sea wheat prices are pushing higher, providing support for U.S. wheat prices. December hard red wheat, 0.75 cents higher today, 5.31¼. December soft red slipped 0.25 cents to 5.94. December spring wheat, 1¼ cents higher, 5.44, Chip.
Yeah, you know, that comment there is that you made, that there's a lot of truth to it. Because as dry as it is in the U.S. Southern Plains, you would think that that would be having some kind of an impact on our day-to-day wheat trade. And I'm not too sure if it is.
December corn futures found support at yesterday's low and remained above support at Friday's low throughout the session today. Export inspections of just over 632,000 metric tons of corn in the weekend at October 8 were at the low end of trade expectations, and USDA this morning announced the sale of 100,000 metric tons of U.S. corn for delivery to Mexico in the current marketing year, but none of the demand news provided much support for corn prices. December corn futures 2.25 cents higher, 391.25. March corn gained 2.5 cents, 399.25. May corn 403. That's up 2.25 today.
Yeah, it feels like if this, I'm saying this knowing that there was a huge amount of hedge pressure that this market had to absorb over the last 24, 48 hours. Yep. But it feels like this market needs to be fed more bullish incentive if it's going to continue to push to the upside. The update that we got to the numbers on Friday, and I'll ask Joe and Brian about that, about this here in just a minute, but it feels like all the bullishness from the report on Friday has already been built into the market.
November bean prices yesterday crashed through support at Friday's low, but prices today found support at yesterday's low. The 1040 level in November beans is also the level that stopped the rally in mid-September and then became a launching pad for the very quick 40-cent rally to the October 9 high. Yeah. Chart watchers view this retest of the breakout area as price positive, suggesting a resumption of the uptrend after yesterday's downside correction. Export inspections of soybeans in the weekend at October 8 totaled 2.157 million metric tons. That was at the top end of trade expectations. USDA also noted that China was the destination of more than 75% of those shipments. Jeez. November bean futures 10.25 cents higher, 1044. Jan beans up 10.25, 1047. March beans closed at 10.37.25, up 11.5 cents. And we thought maybe there'd be a daily sale announced today, but
Gonna have to wait a little bit longer. Wait a little bit longer to get that daily, the next daily export sales announcement, because it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, well, we'll be here. December cotton 46 ticks higher, 68.83. March cotton gained 46 points to 69.64. You want to hold off on the livestock?
Yeah.
You want to get to Joe?
Yep.
I see him. Yep.
Let's do
right
that.
On.
Let's bring him in right now. Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. How you doing, Joe?
Good. What's going on today?
Well, what I'm most curious about right now is what's going to be the incentive for the professional trading funds, the funds in the market, to either defend an already long position or to get even longer?
Well, in the beans, it probably doesn't take much to defend it. You just need to see China actually take delivery of these sales and maybe continue buying. I think that everybody knows that the sales to China are going to shut off at some point in time once it looks like Brazil's got a crop, and that's the most likely scenario. I mean, barring some sort of very significant weather disaster. So, I mean, I think that's all it would take. Now, that being said, there will be volatility, as we've seen. We got a very friendly report and a very negative reaction to it over the last couple of days. So there's going to be volatility, but for now, I mean, I think that market and I think the corn market, they're both holding up very well. You've got technical uptrends in place, even after this little correction in both markets still.
Okay. So all of the bullishness that was in the supply and demand report, those bottom lines for corn and soybeans, that's built into current prices, and we've got to find something new before these markets go higher. Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't think the corn numbers were bullish. I think the corn numbers were neutral to bearish, if anything. I don't know why the market rallied on those numbers, to be honest with you, unless they believe the exports are too low. I mean, the U.S. carryout was above expectations. The world carryout was above expectations. Your stocks-to-use ratio is 15%, which is the same as it's been within a certain degree the last four or 5 years. The beans is where the story's at.
Yeah. Yeah, that stocks-to-use ratio, I mean – it's screaming 360 for a national average on-farm cash price, you know, USDA's price, because
the issue is that we never rallied early in the year, so we had to do it at some point, I guess, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. Joe, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Yep, catch up.
You bet. That's Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation about what matters the most in these grain and livestock markets. We've got Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions, up next. all know that stress is bad for us, and too much can have a negative impact on our health. But did you know that stress is bad for your corn's health, too? I'm joined today by Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, can you tell us about some of the impacts of weeds on corn's health?
Sure. You know, corn plants are a lot like us in that they don't react well to stress and can underperform in high-stress situations. Their defensive measures may even create additional unintentional sources of stress. Stalks grow taller, leaves grow wider, while also growing parallel to the row versus out into the row, meaning there can be a lot of competition for things like sunlight.
Yeah, these defensive measures out there, what are some of the lesser known consequences?
Yeah, just in more technical terms, all of these changes fundamentally alter corn growth because many of the nutrients needed for strong root development are used elsewhere. And environmental factors like drought, high heat, things like insect pressure can compound this stress created by the underdeveloped roots. So as nutrition suffers and stress mounts, corn plants may not have enough antioxidants to neutralize those cell-damaging free radicals. This imbalance leads to less than optimal plant health and ultimately chip yield loss.
Yeah. So for corn growers that are looking to minimize plant stress and maximize their yield potential, what do you recommend?
Only Acuron herbicide unlocks corn's full yield potential. The consistent combination of powerful weed control and long-lasting residual protects corn from tough, yield-robbing weeds all season long, helping to alleviate the stress associated with weed competition and preserving that yield potential. And with Acuron, it's 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than with any other herbicide.
That's impressive. Thank you so much, Steve. That is Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, talking to us about the impact of stress on corn yields. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels per acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator at findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there. That's a lot of corn, especially when you consider how many of the world's problems could be solved by finding markets for it. So, how do we use all this corn for good? POET is working on getting higher blends of ethanol into the marketplace so that demand grows right along with increasing corn yields. An increase in the fuel supply from 10 to 15% nationwide would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of additional corn demand for the American farmer. That's 2 billion really good reasons to encourage people you know to use biofuels. The more people understand about biofuels, the better local operations will do and the better off our planet will be. Help others understand the importance of biofuels and visit poet.com/ag to learn more about how POET is using corn from local producers to change the world.
You need harvest results, not another radio ad. So let's get to the point. Channel Seedsmen place products to perform in your fields, and the results can speak for themselves. Get yield results from your area and less yapping at channel.com/yield. Huh, I guess less talking means more time for music. Classic rock, anyone?
That's channel.com/yield for local harvest results.
Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize the Nature Conservancy for its efforts to help farmers build healthier soils and a more resilient agriculture system. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. We're going to be talking with Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions here in just a moment. But first, Davis, if you would, the livestock news.
Sure thing. Well, December live cattle futures, they opened solidly higher, crashed through support of the September 22 low of 109.80, and then quickly recovered to close just slightly lower. December live cattle futures were 40 cents higher, 111.22.5. February cattle gained 57.5 to close at 113.65. November feeders gained 127.5 to settle at 136.82.5. And on the snout side, December lean hog futures opened slightly lower and traded into the upside price gap between 64.80 and 65.22 and a half at midday. The contract came within a dime of filling the gap before rallying more than a dollar from session lows. December hogs 47 and a half cents lower, 66.15, and February hogs slipped a dime, 70.12 and a half. There you go, buddy.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's bring him in. Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions. How you doing today, Brian?
Hey, I am doing good, Chip. Good to talk with you. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing just fine, just fine. Glad that you could come back for another conversation, because I know that you've been traveling around Iowa up into South Dakota, right?
That is correct. Since we last talked, I've been out into some branch offices in South Dakota and through Nebraska, Iowa, back to Missouri. So something I haven't seen in a really long time, that was soybeans piled up in different piles, different elevators, storing soybeans on the ground next to corn piles. And that's really unusual, especially in the Western Corn Belt. You just don't see that. And imagine they'll get picked up at some point before the winter comes. But I had to look twice when I drove by those piles.
Well, don't you think that's just evidence of how quickly this bean crop is moving out of farmers' hands?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, it's a combination of very good conditions for harvesting. We're combining at very fast pace with very little slowdown. And a lot of soybeans are being moved right off the combine, right into the elevator and being sold. And that's exactly what the market is telling producers to do. It wants the soybeans right now. It doesn't want you to store them. It doesn't want you to hang on to them until March or May or July. In fact, it's telling you will lose money if you do that. And so we have a premium put into the front months here. Farmers are responding and doing exactly what the market is telling you to do, and that is to sell the front month. Sell the product and then look into the future, buy the March contracts, buy them back on the board at a cheaper price, or buy option strategies back and have that for a real ownership strategy. I think that is the best strategy to go for marketing for, this year for soybeans.
Okay. Very good. And it's not just soybeans, because corn harvest is progressing very, very quickly. We're going to learn more about that this afternoon in the crop progress report. But when you just sit back and you take a look at a couple of things, the calendar and the expected size of both the corn and the soybean crop, and then you look at the markets and the charts, these corn and soybeans are doing a really nice job of absorbing that harvest pressure, aren't they?
They really are, because, as we mentioned with soybeans, there's a lot of selling taking place, very little storing being done. And same thing in the corn. A lot of corn is being stored. There's piles of corn around as well, but the market is absorbing that harvest pressure very well. And a lot of that is being offset by record type fund buying. The funds are holding near or are record long positions in soybeans. I think since the 2012 and 13 year, that was the all-time record they had. They're right up in that area again in the soybean complex. But that is, the one catalyst that's driving things higher. And when you talk about how high can they go, that's part of the answer, is how much do the funds continue to keep buying and how aggressive will they be during the fall months here. But so far, so good in the pricing structure. We're still trending higher, still moving higher.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about last week's crop production report. And Joe reminded me that we are looking at a report for corn that carryover was actually above the average pre-report trade guess. Beans came in below the average trade guess. But nonetheless, this corn market has performed fairly well. And beans, the volatility that we've seen over the, not so much today, but the previous two sessions, kind of off the charts volatility in here. Through all of this, and beans in particular, do we have Friday's crop update, demand update? Is that all built into the market now, and we're looking for new and fresh info?
Yeah, I think the market is always looking for that new information on which to trade. It's always looking for fresh news, fresh direction, always repricing itself based on what new information that we receive. And so we did have this report out on Friday. It wasn't really bullish for corn. It they did lower old crop corn stocks below 2 billion bushels by 5 million yep. bushels. So very small change there. And really not something that was a surprise because we got right. that in the quarterly stocks number. But that was the first time since 2015-16 marking year that we've been below 2 billion bushels. The last time, last 3-4 years, it's been 2.1 to 2.2 range of ending stocks. And we're right back into that same range here for corn, 2.167 billion bushels. That's not a bullish number. It's not something that suggests we should be at $4 corn and moving higher. It tells us that we're kind of in the same range we've been in over the last 3 and 4 marketing seasons. We get above $4, it doesn't stay there very long. If we drop below 350, you don't spend a lot of time down there either. It's more of a range right. kind of from this area where we're at to the 350 mark. And I think we've got a nice premium built into the corn based off of expectations that we're going to continue to sell corn to China, to other countries, and our exports are going to be strong. And that's why we're hovering in $390 to $4 bushel range. And if that exports back off, we could slip to the lower end of the range around $350 mark on the December contract.
Okay. And I'm thinking out loud, and this is dangerous. I've proven that many times before. I think there was a bit of an attitude change for corn in Friday's reports in that the supply side isn't near what it was feared to be, even just going back 60 days. So we've pulled back on the beginning stocks, last year's carryover, like you said, the September 1 corn stocks, 1.995 billion. We've taken some out of the 2020 corn crop by way of acres, not so much yield. I think there's an attitude that if we're going anywhere with yield going forward, it's going to be to pull it back just a little bit, take away from that supply a little bit more, which leaves the usage side of things, Brian. And with the way that the world board has been, dartboarding some of its usage estimates, I think the attitude is that there's a better chance that our demand numbers are going up than they are going down. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think if you're in the camp that you think yields are still overstated by the USDA, that's the argument to be made. There's certainly people out there who are combining that are uncovering pretty poor yields, real disappointing because of some dry areas. But I've heard from more than one producer across Iowa who's combining at an angle, trying to pick up some of that corn that's been laying flat. He's just amazed at how good the yields actually are. It's not the 230 bushel corn, but it's 130 to 150, even though it's laying flat, and that's a real surprise. And so there's still, I think, a supply story that's going to play out for corn here as we go into October, get some more harvest data. A lot of the USDA plots that they use to determine yield in these reports, they've harvested about 60% of those at the time of this last supply and demand report on Friday. So there may not be a significant change, but I think there is still some changes to be made as far as the supply balance sheet goes in the next report from the government.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on the demand side of the story, I'm thinking back to a conversation that I had with Jeff Bruin this morning in the first hour of AgriTalk, talking about getting back to about 90% of production on ethanol. I don't know if we've got that built into the market quite yet or not. So that could be the source of some additional demand coming into this market. And then, of course, on the export side, both you and Joe have already said it. If China's in here and taking delivery of corn, that makes it a lot different than buying corn. And I think we're still kind of waiting for that. I want to talk more about that when we come back. We're talking with Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions, right here on AgriTalk. There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there right now, just waiting to solve some of the world's biggest problems, which comes out to about 2 billion reasons why you should be encouraging people to use biofuels. If there was enough demand for biofuels, not only could we address these problems, that corn surplus could quickly help ag producers like you improve your operation. So help others understand the importance of biofuels and visit poet.com/ag to learn more about how Poet is using corn from local producers to change the world. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Dr. Michael Cordonier sticks with his South American crop estimates. His bias is neutral toward beans and neutral to higher on corn. Chinese soybean imports in September up by nearly one-fifth from a year ago. China imported 9.79 million metric tons of soybeans during September. Chinese meat imports remain strong. China imported 834,000 metric tons of meat during September. China's overall imports post biggest surge since before the coronavirus pandemic. France makes sweeping cuts to crop estimates. Indonesian president warns that the country should get ready for La Nina weather hazards. Consultancy cuts grain production and export forecasts for Ukraine, and China calls on U.S. to halt sales of weapons to Taiwan. Check it all out at tryprofarmer.com. Your operation is teeming with data points, and managing that information can be tough. There's one agricultural platform that converts data points to profit. A subscription to AGI SureTrack gives your data a place to connect. Whether it's production costs or equipment performance, machine data or payroll, deploying an easy-to-use platform moves your operation forward. See what the future of ag looks like, all for free. Your AGI SureTrack dealer or territory rep is ready to help. Visit AGISureTrack.com/connect to schedule a demo or start your free trial today.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. We're talking with Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions. Before we get back to Brian, Davis.
Yes.
If you would go ahead and recap how the markets closed today, that'd be great.
I would love to. December, hard red winter wheat, 0.75 cents higher, 5.31 1/4. December soft red slipped 0.25 cents, 5.94. December corn futures 2 1/4 cents higher, but 3.91 1/4. March corn firmed 2.5 cents to 3.99 1/4. November soybean futures 10 1/4 cents higher, 10.44. January beans jumped 10 1/4 cents to 10.47. December cotton 46 ticks higher, 68.83. On the livestock side, December live cattle futures 40 cents higher, 111.22 1/2. November feeders up 127.5, 136.82 1/2. And December lean hogs 47.5 cents lower at 66.15, but off session lows. So, you know, it wasn't terrible for the hogs. Go easy on the hogs, yeah. Chip. Easy
Go
on
easy
the hogs.
On them. Go yeah. easy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Supreme Court hearings for Judge Barrett have been running on. And I looked during the break, I spun around just check out what the headlines were and everything. And it was Barrett faces questions from Senate hearing. I watched part of it. It's not questions.
Oh, it's not.
It is not questions. It is a barrage of partisan storytelling. All it is. One right after the other. There's a few questions in there, mm-hmm. but they're asking her questions that she can't answer. And they know that she can't answer them. Mm-hmm. So the only reason that the questions are being asked is to make a statement.
So I think they call that grandstanding, right? Is that how you would characterize it?
I think maybe that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. So, what a great time to do that when you're trying to choose, you know, a lifelong appointment potential. Right?
And the thing is, the part that I saw that I thought was so interesting was that she basically said, listen, if you're going to ask me to theoretically answer how I might how I might decide in any of these cases. I can't do that. But I'm more than happy to talk about any of my my opinions that were written on court cases in the past. I'm more than willing to talk about things that I've written in papers. I'm more than willing. And instead, they keep going with, well, what are you going to do if this comes up? Well, I can't talk about that.
Right, right.
It's just absolutely infuriating.
It's a shame. It's a shame.
It is. Yeah. It is. And it's, I guess it's not to be unexpected. All right.
Who would ever want to be a Supreme Court justice after this? Imagine they treated astronauts like that. Imagine they treated astronauts like that. I want to be an astronaut when I grow up. Oh, really? Well, don't get me started. I'm sorry. You lit my fuse there.
Right. I must have, because you're talking about being an astronaut. Nice and I know that one time when you tried, tried to be an astronaut, your fuse wasn't quite long enough.
Not quite. I'll be back. No. I'll be back. Persistence. It'll get you to the moon, Alice.
You always got to wonder. You got to wonder when the rocket comes in a box with Acme on the side of it.
Yes.
You got to wonder.
Came with a free
Acme Rocket Company. Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions, is my guest today. Sorry about that, Brian. I just had to get that off my chest.
Yes, I'm sorry, Brian. Yes.
You don't have to apologize to me. It's all good, guys. She's doing this hearing without any notes. It's kind of actually amazing.
I saw that, too.
I noticed that, too. Yeah. It is very amazing that this stuff just is locked in there, in her head, and that she has the ability to recall it the way that she is. And she's, just quoting judges' opinions from the past. It's pretty remarkable stuff. It really is. Okay. Yeah. China. That's where I wanted to go. Brian, all this, you heard it in headline news with the grain purchases, the meat purchases, the overall imports in September pushing to new highs. What's going on there? From your perspective, I mean, is this legitimate stuff, or is this just trying to make the United States feel like they are doing what they can to meet the phase one trade agreement?
Well, I think we're able to look at the export shipments, and they came out this morning as evidence that China is taking soybeans. You know, many times during the growing season, they'll just lock in prices or commit to buying soybeans and then not end up taking them or rolling them to another marketing year. And as we got closer to the end of the year in August, they ended up fulfilling all their purchases that they had on the books. And then they started to buy for the new crop marketing year, and they haven't quit. And so now we're seeing shipments this morning at a marketing year high, 79 million bushels, and about 75% of that 79 million, or about 60 million bushels, was allocated for China, shipment to China. They are taking product, and that's a really encouraging sign that they're not just banking this and then at some point going to cancel if they got South America prices much cheaper. They are actually taking the product. There's a need for it, I think, in China, and it's a very encouraging sign. Now, they may not end up with everything they've got on the books, but so far, of what we saw today, very good that China's taken that much soybeans off of out of their commitments to buy it from the United States.
Yep. So that puts the focus back on South American weather, right? As long if there's concern over that bean crop down there, I would expect that China's going to, it may not be real aggressive buying, but they'll continue to make a couple of purchases here and there.
Yeah, I would expect that they'll continue to buy some from the United States. You know, as you mentioned, what it gets down to is South American weather. I think they made a few purchases that was unexpected to the trade to get us pushed up into this this price range, touching up in the 1070, 1080 range, because South America was a little slow in planting in northern Brazil because of dry conditions, which means they'd also be slow to harvest, and there'd be kind of a void or opportunity for the U.S. to make some sales to China in that time frame. So what it gets down to is, will Brazil have a big enough crop to meet China's needs, and will they have to step in the United States? Will drought curtail that crop. But by all accounts, it looks like they're going to plant more acres. And why wouldn't they, with higher prices and cheap Brazilian real? They would certainly try and plant as many acres as possible. So, you know, what the report told us, or what it sent a message to me on Friday, at a 290 million bushel carryout, yeah, with prospects that if China continues to be an aggressive buyer, or South American weather becomes an issue, we could see tighter stocks. We're going to need to buy acres in the spring. So I think your story here for soybeans is one that's pretty friendly all the way into the spring time frame, until we get those acres bought and the crop harvested out of South America. So I think it's real important for producers to, if they've been making sales like we talked about in the first segment, to make sure they have some form of a re-ownership strategy into at least April, May, right, timeframe here, through options, through futures, whatever mechanism they're comfortable with.
Right, right. Okay, like you said, we did talk about strategies on soybeans in the last segment. Before we get too late on time here, I want to talk about just the ideas that you're kicking around with your customers, your clients, about what to do with corn marketing right now. What's the conversation sound like?
Well, I think in corn, you want to be doing similar to what you're doing in soybeans. You don't really want to sit and store a lot of this crop unless you're planning on carrying it out into the spring, into the summer. But, you know, 390 Dees corn out of the field is pretty attractive. And then if we do start to build a carry, that carry isn't very much right now, you know, 14 cents, 15 cents. Normally it's 27, 28. That may widen out. And if you're going to put your corn on storage and hang on to it, when that carry widens out, that'd be a great time to roll that hedge to July and lock that in as well, and add another, you know, 13, 14 cents if we can move out to closer to full carry.
Okay. Okay, excellent. Yeah, I'm thinking more about your comment about acres too, Brian. What are we looking at on the new crop, on the 21 contracts, Dees corn, Nov bean, soy, corn to soybean ratio? It's just under 2.5 to 1 right now. That's not giving us a lot of incentive to increase our bean acres yet. Does that need to change?
Yeah, I think it's going to need to change. I think it's going to have to, and it probably will over the course of the winter when we get closer to you know, planting in the southern plains in February. That's when I think we'll see, you know, that shift a little bit more. Yeah, you know, Dees corn of 21 is at 395, soybean contracts at 976. That may not be that same incentive that we're seeing in today's pricing structure. Producers are going to look at, you know, corn price being relatively the same, but soybeans 75 cents cheaper to plant new crop soybeans. I think they're going to, that is going to change as I said, as we go through the next 6 months. There's going to be that incentive to plant soybeans and not to plant as much corn for this next year. I remember back in 2003, Chip, that I go all the way back then, that we had kind of this same structure of the market where the front month was much higher than the deferred contracts. And during that time frame, soybeans were strong all through the winter months, all the way until April, when we started to get the crop in the ground, giving producers that incentive to price that new crop soybean contract, have some re-ownership strategies in place. This may play out the same way, especially if weather is a little bit concerning, a little bit dry in South America.
Awesome. That gives us something to think about right there, Brian. That's good stuff. Good stuff. All right, man. Hey, thanks so much. We'll do it again here real soon, okay?
I appreciate talking with you guys. You're the best.
All right. That is Brian Hoops. He is with Midwest Market Solutions. Coming up next, Jason Taji, Farm Mobile.
We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
That's got to be my favorite.
You like that one?
It's got to be, because all I can imagine is at this time of the year, if the radio's turned up loud enough in the cab, they hear those sounds at the start of that bump. They've got to be looking all over in the cab going, what is going wrong? Yes. Why is this happening?
Don't be alarmed. Right. It's only the Beastie Boys.
Yes. Yeah. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis. Let's bring in Jason Taji. Jason is the CEO of Farm Mobile. Jason, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing really good. Really good.
Good. Good, good, good. It's time for our second Pro Farmer Harvest Report that is powered by the Farm Mobile Index. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago and what it is. This is our first update to the initial numbers that we had, Jason. And people need to understand that what we're talking about here is it is a snapshot from time, of course, of what yields are. But this is real-time information coming in. I mean, it's kind of my first experience with crowdsourcing data, right?
Yeah, you know, it's this is as of the reporting midnight on the 7th. So, you know, we're going back a couple of days, but as of midnight on the 7th, these are the real yields that were coming in from fields, you know, across the country.
Yeah. And because of the way that it comes in, yes, you can break it down to the state by state level, but I want to emphasize we're not zeroing in and talking about any one person's operation, are we?
That's correct. The way to look at this is acres that are reporting, and the boundary that we are using is the entire state.
Right. Good. Good, good, good. Okay. So let's start with corn. As more and more crop is being harvested, you're getting more and more data in. Were there any big movers from the first week in as far as corn yield goes?
You know, I think the couple things to look at, and I'll run through these. In Illinois, right now, we're seeing at about 210. Indiana is about 204. Iowa is about 137. So Iowa's mm-hmm. come up 5 bushels from what we were reporting last week, but we're still off quite a bit from what the USDA is projecting. The USDA mm-hmm. did cut their Iowa average, I think, from 191 to 186 last week. So kind of got 5 on each side of that. But that's one I think we need to keep an eye on. Kansas, 138. Minnesota, 193, that was up quite a bit from last week, so that one's come up a bit, and Missouri's at 153 right now.
Okay. Yeah, some of these areas that we've been talking about with analysts and with producers about that, we went through that dry August, and it feels like in some of the areas they were able to build yield by that third week of August when the team was out on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour. They identified that yield, and somehow, some way, it held on to that yield even through the dry end of the month into September. Then, you know, it was a dry month at the end of the growing season for that corn crop in a lot of places. And even to see Illinois coming in at 210, I mean, come on, that's a doggone good number in any year. I don't care what we're talking about. So this is... it's all very impressive. And the other one that really jumps out at me, Jason, is Minnesota seems to be confirming a really good northern growing area corn crop.
Yeah, you know, that's the one we saw the most gain this week. And USDA even raised their numbers there for Minnesota as well, just a couple bushels. But I think that's exactly right.
Right. Okay, let's get into soybeans. The first look at soybean numbers coming in. What are you seeing?
Okay, so almost every state is reporting better than what the USDA is projecting right now. So if we can keep the prices up a little bit, this might be a decent opportunity. So right now we're seeing Illinois coming in at about 72. We're seeing Indiana at 71, Iowa at 57, Kansas at 60. That's the one that sticks out here. Minnesota 66, Missouri 62, Nebraska 61. So in all of those, you know, early beans are generally thought of to be, you know, normally a little bit better yield. So we'll see next week how we follow this up. But it's a pretty strong first indication.
Yeah. Okay. So part of the reason for somebody to join Farm Mobile and put one of the units in their machine is so that they can get access to this information as it's coming in. Are you seeing any marketing incentives come out of the information that you've gathered so far, Jason?
You know, I think when you talk about marketing incentives, what Farm Mobile is really here to do is to help farmers document the activities that they do, because sometimes you get so busy, you know, on the job at hand that you kind of, you know, some of the things kind of slack from record keeping and that sort of perspective. So
okay.
Generally what we're here to do is to act like a Fitbit and be in that machine and collect all the information and make sure that we're putting it into the right field containers and we're getting the right information on there so that you can go back and review it later. And so as a byproduct of that, the Harvest Index is one of the byproducts that we have. We also have a return on seed functionality that we're going to be releasing, as well as a lot of different just metrics from your machine data, like how much how much time is your machine spent idling and transporting and all these kind of things. And you can't measure, you can't manage what you can't measure. And that's really what a puck helps you do in a lot of different ways.
Right, right. Gotcha. Okay, so the next update comes our way when?
We will have the next update coming for Pro Farmer subscribers in the Friday afternoon newsletter.
Okay.
And we will talk again next week. Farm Mobile subscribers can log in daily to see these updates once a day.
Yeah, if you're a member of Farm Mobile, the information is there, right?
It's there for you to log in and look at it, and it's been a pretty popular page view hit from a lot of our members here in the last few days.
I'll bet it has. Jason, thanks, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Thank you.
All right. Yep, that is Jason Taji. He is the CEO of Farm Mobile. Okay, the string of weather that we're in, Davis, it's mm-hmm. just been incredible.
Yes.
The National Weather Service 6-10-day outlook for October 19th through the 23rd has got those below normal temperatures coming into the Corn Belt and above normal precipitation. And at this time of the year, when we're talking about below normal temps and above normal precip, it starts to, you at least have got to start thinking about some of the snow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's hard to think about it as I look out the window right now, and it's a beautiful day. A little windy. A little windy, but it's a beautiful day out there. It's kind of crazy to think about snow moving in, but I guess it's that time of the year. So
it is. It is. It's always cold on Halloween, seems like.
That's right.
I'm targeting Halloeen. Right. Yeah.
I love it. Very good. Very good. All right. Hey, thanks for listening this afternoon. Tomorrow morning, we've got Ted Matthews and a Farmer Forum. And tomorrow afternoon, Don Rose from U.S. Commodities right here on AgriTalk. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials. One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.